This is Audible.
No man chooses evil because it is evil. He only mistakes it for happiness, the good he seeks. Mary Wollstonecraft.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Mortal Instruments, Book 5, City of Lost Souls, by Cassandra Clare. Read by Molly Quinn.
Prologue. Simon stood and stared numbly at the front door of his house. He'd never known another home. This was the place his parents had brought him back to when he was born. He had grown up within the walls of the Brooklyn row house. He played on the street under the leafy shade of the trees in the summer and had made improvised sleds out of garbage can lids in the winter. In this house, his family had sat Shiva after his father had died. Here he had kissed Clary for the first time. He had never imagined a day when the door of the house would be closed to him. The last time he had seen his mother, she had called him a monster and prayed at him that he would go away. He had made her forget that he was a vampire, using glamour, but he had not known how long the glamour would last. As he stood in the cold autumn air, staring in front of him, he knew it had not lasted long enough. The door was covered with signs, stars of David splashed on in paint, the incised shape of the symbol for Chai, life. Tefillin were bound to the doorknob and knocker. Ahamsa, the hand of God, covered the peephole. Numbly put his hand to the metal mezuzah affixed to the right side of the doorway. He saw the smoke rise from the place where his hand touched the holy object, but he felt nothing. No pain. Only a terrible, empty blackness rising slowly into cold rage. He kicked the bottom of the door and heard the echo through the house. "Mom!" he shouted. "Mom, it's me!" There was no reply. Only the sound of the bolts being turned on the door. His sensitized hearing had recognized his mother's footsteps, her breathing, but she said nothing. He could smell acrid fear and panic even through the wood. "Mom!" his voice broke. "Mom, this is ridiculous! Let me in! It's me, Simon!" The door juddered as if she had kicked it. "Go away!" Her voice was rough, unrecognizable with terror. "Murderer! I don't kill people!" Simon leaned his head against the door. He knew he could probably kick it down, but what would be the point? "I told you, I drink animal blood!" "You killed my son," she said. "You killed him and put a monster in his place!" "I am your son. You wear his face and speak with his voice, but you are not him! You're not Simon!" Her voice rose to almost a scream. "Get away from my house before I kill you, monster!" "Becky," he said. His face was wet. He put his hands up to touch it, and they came away stained. His tears were bloody. "What have you told Becky?" "Stay away from your sister!" Simon heard a clattering from inside the house, as if something had been knocked over. "Mom," he said again. But this time his voice wouldn't rise. It came out as a hoarse whisper. His hand had begun to throb. "I need to know. Is Becky there? Mom, open the door, please." "Stay away from Becky!" She was backing away from the door. He could hear it. Then came the unmistakable squeal of the kitchen door swinging open, the creak of the linoleum as she walked on it, the sound of the drawer being opened. Suddenly he imagined his mother grabbing for one of the knives. Before I kill you, monster. The thought rocked him back on his heels. If she struck out at him, the mark would rise. It would destroy her as it had destroyed Lilith. He dropped his hand and backed up slowly, stumbling down the steps and across the sidewalk, fetching up against the trunk of one of the big trees that shaded the block. He stood where he was, staring at the front door of his house, marked and disfigured with the symbols of his mother's hate for him. No, he reminded himself. She didn't hate him. She thought he was dead. What she hated was something that didn't exist. I am not what she says I am. He didn't know how long he would have stood there, staring, if his phone hadn't begun to ring, vibrating his coat pocket. He reached for it reflexively, noticing that the pattern from the front of the mezuzah, interlocked stars of David, was burned into the palm of his hand. He switched hands and put the phone to his ear. Hello? Simon? It was Clary. She sounded breathless. Where are you? Home, he said, and paused. My mother's house, he amended. His voice sounded hollow and distant to his own ears. Why aren't you back at the Institute? Is everyone all right? That's just it, she said. Just after you left, Maris came back down from the roof where Jace was supposed to be waiting. There was no one there. Simon moved, without quite realizing he was doing it, like a mechanical doll. He began walking up the street toward the subway station. What do you mean there was no one there? Jace was gone, she said, and he could hear the strain in her voice. And so was Sebastian. Simon stopped in the shadow of a bare-branched tree. But Sebastian was dead. He's dead, Clary. Then you tell me why his body isn't there, because it isn't, she said, her voice finally breaking. There's nothing up there but a lot of blood and broken glass. They're both gone. Simon, Jace is gone. Part 1. No Evil Angel. Love is a familiar. Love is a devil. There is no evil angel but love. William Shakespeare. Love's Labor's Lost. 2 weeks later. Chapter 1. The Last Council. How much longer will the verdict take, do you think? Clary asked. She had no idea how long they had been waiting, but it felt like 10 hours. There were no clocks in Isabel's black and hot pink powder puff bedroom, just piles of clothes, heaps of books, stacks of weapons, a vanity overflowing with sparkling makeup, used brushes and open drawers spilling lacy slips, sheer tights, and feather boas. It had a certain backstage at La Caja Folle design aesthetic, but over the past 2 weeks, Clary had spent enough time among the glittering mess to have begun to find it comforting. Isabel, standing over by the window with Church in her arms, stroked the cat's head absently. Church regarded her with baleful yellow eyes. Outside the window, a November storm was in full bloom, rain streaking the windows like clear paint. Not much longer, she said slowly. She wasn't wearing any makeup, which made her look younger, her dark eyes bigger. 5 minutes, probably. Clary, sitting on Izzy's bed between a pile of magazines and a rattling stack of serif blades, swallowed hard against the bitter taste in her throat. I'll be back. 5 minutes. That had been the last thing she had said to the boy she loved more than anything else in the world. Now she thought it might be the last thing she would ever get to say to him. Clary remembered the moment perfectly. The roof garden, the crystalline October night, the stars burning icy white against a cloudless black sky, the paving stones smeared with black runes spattered with ichor and blood, Jace's mouth on hers, the only warm thing in a shivering world, clasping the Morgenstern ring around her neck, the love that moves the sun and all the other stars. turning to look for him as the elevator took her away, sucking her back down into the shadows of the building. She had joined the others in the lobby, hugging her mother, Luke, Simon, but some part of her, as it always was, had still been with Jace, floating above the city on that rooftop, the two of them alone in the cold and brilliant electric city. Maris and Kadir had been the ones to get into the elevator to join Jace on the roof and to see the remains of Lilith's ritual. It was another 10 minutes before Maris returned, alone. When the doors had opened and Clary had seen her face, white and set and frantic, she had known. What had happened next had been like a dream. The crowd of shadow hunters in the lobby had surged towards Maris. Alec had broken away from Magnus, and Isabel had leaped to her feet. White bursts of light cut through the darkness like the soft explosions of camera flashes at a crime scene, as one after another, Seraph blades lit the shadows. Pushing her way forward, Clary heard the story in broken pieces. The rooftop garden was empty. Jace was gone. The glass coffin that had held Sebastian had been smashed open. Glass was lying everywhere in fragments. Blood, still fresh, dripped down the pedestal on which the coffin had sat. The shadow hunters were making plans quickly to spread out in a radius and search the area around the building. Magnus was there, his hands sparkling blue, turning to Clary to ask if she had something of Jace's that he could track him with. Numbly, she had given him the Morgenstern ring and retreated into a corner to call Simon. She had only just closed the phone when the voice of a shadow hunter rang out above the rest. Tracking? That'll work only if he's still alive. With that much blood, it's not very likely. Somehow, that was the last straw. Prolonged hypothermia, exhaustion, and shock took their toll, and she felt her knees give. Her mother caught her before she hit the ground. There was a dark blur after that. She woke up the next morning in her bed at Luke's, sitting bolt upright with her heart going like a trip hammer. Sure, she had had a nightmare. As she struggled out of bed, the fading bruises on her arms and legs told a different story, as did the absence of her ring. Throwing on jeans and a hoodie, she staggered out into the living room to find Jocelyn, Luke, and Simon seated there with somber expressions on their faces. She didn't even need to ask, but she did anyway. Did they find him? Is he back? Jocelyn stood up. Sweetheart, he's still missing. But not dead. They haven't found a body. She collapsed onto the couch next to Simon. No, he's not dead. I'd know. She remembered Simon holding her hand while Luke told her what they did know. That Jace was still gone, and so was Sebastian. The bad news was that the blood on the pedestal had been identified as Jace's. The good news was that there was less of it than they had thought. It had mixed with the water from the coffin to give an impression of a greater volume of blood than there had really been. They now thought it was quite possible he had survived whatever had happened. "But what happened?" she demanded. Luke shook his head, blue eyes somber. "Nobody knows, Clary." Her veins felt as if her blood had been replaced with ice water. "I want to help. I want to do something. I don't want to just sit here while Jace is missing." "I wouldn't worry about that," Jocelyn said grimly. "The Clave wants to see you." Invisible ice cracked in Clary's joints and tendons as she stood up. "Fine. Whatever. I'll tell them anything they want if they'll find Jace." "You'll tell them anything they want because they have the mortal sword." There was despair in Jocelyn's voice. "Oh, baby, I'm so sorry." And now, after 2 weeks of repetitive testimony, after scores of witnesses had been called, after she had held the mortal sword a dozen times, Clary sat in Isabel's bedroom and waited for the council to rule on her fate. She couldn't help but remember what it had felt like to hold the mortal sword. It was like tiny fishhooks embedded in your skin, pulling the truth out of you. She had knelt, holding it, in the circle of the speaking stars, and had heard her own voice telling the council everything. how Valentine had raised the angel Raziel, and how she had taken the power of controlling the angel from him by erasing his name in the sand and writing hers over it. She had told them how the angel had offered her one wish, and she had used it to raise Jace from the dead. She had told them how Lilith had possessed Jace, and Lilith had planned to use Simon's blood to resurrect Sebastian, Clary's brother, whom Lilith regarded as a son. How Simon's mark of Cain had ended Lilith, and they had thought Sebastian had been ended too, no longer a threat. Clary sighed and flipped her phone open to check the time. "They've been in there for an hour," she said. "Is that normal? Is it a bad sign?" Isabel dropped Church, who let out a yowl. She came over to the bed and sat down beside Clary. Isabel looked even more slender than usual. Like Clary, she'd lost weight in the past 2 weeks, but elegant as always in black cigarette pants and a fitted gray velvet top. Mascara was smudged all around Izzy's eyes, which should have made her look like a raccoon, but just made her look like a French film star instead. She stretched her arms out, and her electrum bracelets with their rune charms jingled musically. "No, it's not a bad sign," she said. "It just means they have a lot to talk over." She twisted the lightwood ring on her finger. "You'll be fine. You didn't break the law. That's the important thing." Clary sighed. Even the warmth of Isabel's shoulder next to hers couldn't melt the ice in her veins. She knew that technically she had broken no laws, but she also knew the Clave was furious at her. It was illegal for a shadow hunter to raise the dead, but not for the angel to do it. Nevertheless, it was such an enormous thing she had done in asking for Jace's life back that she and Jace had agreed to tell no one about it. Now it was out, and it had rocked the Clave. Clary knew they wanted to punish her, if only because her choice had had such disastrous consequences. In some way, she wished they would punish her, break her bones, pull her fingernails out, let the Silent Brothers root through her brain with their belated thoughts. Sort of devil's bargain, her own pain for Jace's safe return. It would have helped her guilt over having left Jace behind on that rooftop, even though Isabel and the others had told her 100 times she was being ridiculous, that they had all thought he was perfectly safe there, and that if Clary had stayed, she would probably now be missing too. "Quit it," Isabel said. For a moment, Clary wasn't sure if Isabel was talking to her or to the cat. Church was doing what he often did when dropped, lying on his back with all 4 legs in the air, pretending to be dead in order to induce guilt in his owners. But then Isabel swept her black hair aside, glaring, and Clary realized she was the one being told off, not the cat. "Quit what? Morbidly thinking about all the horrible things that are going to happen to you, or that you wish would happen to you because you're alive and Jace is... missing?" Isabel's voice jumped, like a record skipping a groove. She never spoke of Jace as being dead, or even gone. She and Alec refused to entertain the possibility. And Isabel had never reproached Clary once for keeping such an enormous secret. Throughout everything, in fact, Isabel had been her staunchest defender. Meeting her every day at the door to the council hall, she had held Clary firmly by the arm as she'd marched past clumps of glaring, muttering shadow hunters. She'd waded through endless council interrogations, shooting dagger glances at anyone who dared look at Clary sideways. Clary had been astonished. She and Isabel had never been enormously close, both of them being the sort of girls who were more comfortable with boys than other female companionship. But Isabel didn't leave her side. Clary was as bewildered as she was grateful. "I can't help it," Clary said. "If I were allowed to patrol, if I were allowed to do anything, I think it wouldn't be so bad." "I don't know." Isabel sounded weary. For the past 2 weeks, she and Alec had been exhausted and gray-faced from 16-hour patrols and searches. When Clary had found out she was banned from patrolling or searching for Jace in any way until the council decided what to do about the fact that she had brought him back from the dead, she'd kicked a hole in her bedroom door. "Sometimes it feels so futile," Isabel added. Ice crackled up and down Clary's bones.
You mean you think he's dead?
No, I don't. I mean, I think there's no way they're still in New York. But they're patrolling other cities, right?
Clary put a hand to her throat, forgetting that the Morgenstern ring no longer hung there. Magnus was still trying to track Jace, though no tracking had yet worked.
Of course they are.
Isabel reached out curiously and touched the delicate silver bell that hung around Clary's neck now in place of the ring.
What's that?
Clary hesitated.
The bell had been a gift from the Seelie Queen.
No, that wasn't quite right.
The Queen of the Fairies didn't give gifts.
The bell was meant to signal the Seelie Queen that Clary wanted her help. Clary had found her hand wandering to it more and more often as the days dragged on with no sign of Jace.
The only thing that stopped Clary was the knowledge the Seelie Queen never gave anything without the expectation of something terrible in return.
Before Clary could reply to Isabel, the door opened. Both girls sat up ramrod straight, Clary clutching one of Izzy's pink pillows so hard that the rhinestones on it dug into the skin of her palms.
Hey.
A slim figure stepped into the room and shut the door. Alec, Isabel's older brother, was dressed in council wear, a black robe figured with silver runes, open now over jeans and a long-sleeved black t-shirt. All the black made his pale skin look paler, his crystal blue eyes bluer. His hair was black and straight like his sister's, but shorter, cut just above his jawline. His mouth was set in a thin line.
Clary's heart started to pound. Alec didn't look happy.
Whatever the news was, it couldn't be good. It was Isabel who spoke.
"How'd it go?" she said quietly. "What's the verdict?"
Alec sat down at the vanity table, swinging himself around the chair to face Izzy and Clary over the back. At another time, it would have been comical. Alec was very tall, with long legs like a dancer, and the way he folded himself awkwardly around the chair made it look like dollhouse furniture.
"Clary," he said.
Gia Penhallow handed down the verdict.
"You're cleared of any wrongdoing. You broke no laws, and Gia feels that you've been punished enough."
Isabel exhaled an audible breath and smiled. For just a moment, a feeling of relief broke through the layer of ice over all of Clary's emotions. She wasn't going to be punished, locked up in the silent city, trapped somewhere where she couldn't help Jace.
Luke, who as the representative of the werewolves on the council had been present for the verdict, had promised to call Jocelyn as soon as the meeting ended, but Clary reached for her phone anyway. The prospect of giving her mother good news for a change was too tempting.
"Clary," Alex said as she flipped her phone open.
"Wait."
She looked at him. His expression was still as serious as an undertaker's. With a sudden sense of foreboding, Clary put her phone back down on the bed.
"Alec, what is it?"
"It wasn't your verdict that took the council so long," said Alec. "There was another matter under discussion." The ice was back. Clary shivered.
"Jace?"
"Not exactly." Alec leaned forward, folding his hands along the back of the chair. "A report came in early this morning from the Moscow Institute. The wardings over Wrangel Island were smashed through yesterday. They've sent a repair team, but having such important wards down for so long, that's a council priority."
Wards, which served, as Clary understood it, as a sort of magical fence system, surrounded Earth, put there by the first generation of Shadow Hunters. They could be bypassed by demons, but not easily, and kept out the vast majority of them, preventing the world from being flooded by a massive demon invasion. She remembered something that Jace had said to her, what felt like years ago. "There used to be only small demon invasions into this world, easily contained. But even in my lifetime, more and more of them have spilled in through the wardings."
"Well, that's bad," Clary said. "But I don't see what it has to do with..."
"The Clave has its priorities," Alec interrupted.
"Searching for Jason Sebastian has been top priority for the past 2 weeks, but they've scoured everything,
and there's no sign of either of them in any downworld haunt. None of Magnus's tracking spells have worked. Elodie, the woman who brought up the real Sebastian, Verlag, confirmed that no one's tried to get in touch with her. That was a long shot anyway. No spies have reported any unusual activity among the known members of Valentine's old circle, and the Silent Brothers haven't been able to figure out exactly what the ritual Lilith performed was supposed to do, or whether it succeeded. The general consensus is that Sebastian, of course they call him Jonathan when they talk about him, kidnapped Jace. But that's not anything we didn't know.
So? Isabel said.
What does that mean? More searching? More patrolling?
Alex shook his head.
They're not discussing expanding the search, he said quietly. They're deprioritizing it. It's been 2 weeks and they haven't found anything. The specially commissioned groups brought over from Idris are going to be sent home. The situation with the ward is taking priority now. Not to mention that the council has been in the middle of delicate negotiations, updating the laws to allow for the new makeup of the council, appointing a new consul and inquisitor, determining different treatment of downworlders. They don't want to be thrown completely off track. Clary stared. They don't want Jace's disappearance to throw them off the track of changing a bunch of stupid old laws? They're giving up? They're not giving up. Alec, Isabel said sharply. Alec took a breath and put his hands up to cover his face. He had long fingers, like Jace's, scarred like Jace's were as well. The eye mark of the Shadow Hunters decorated the back of his right hand. Clary, for you, for us, this has always been about searching for Jace. For the Clave, it's about searching for Sebastian. Jace as well, but primarily Sebastian. He's the danger. He destroyed the wards of Alicante. He's a mass murderer. Jace is...
just another Shadow Hunter, said Isabel.
We die and go missing all the time. He gets a little extra for being a hero of the mortal war, said Alec. But in the end, the Clave was clear. The search will be kept up, but right now it's a waiting game. They expect Sebastian to make the next move. In the meantime, it's third priority for the Clave, if that. They expect us to go back to normal life.
Normal life? Clary couldn't believe it. A normal life without Jace?
That's what they told us after Max died, said Izzy, her black eyes tearless but burning with anger. That we'd get over our grief faster if we just went back to normal life.
It's supposed to be good advice, said Alec from behind his fingers.
Tell that to Dad. Did he even come back from Idris for the meeting?
Alec shook his head, dropping his hands. No. If it's any consolation, there were a lot of people at the meeting speaking out angrily on behalf of keeping the search for Jace up at full strength. Magnus, obviously. Luke, Consul Penhallow. Even Brother Zachariah. But at the end of the day, it wasn't enough.
Clary looked at him steadily.
Alec, she said. Don't you feel anything?
Alec's eyes widened, their blue darkening. And for a moment, Clary remembered the boy who had hated her when she'd first arrived at the Institute. The boy with bitten nails and holes in his sweaters and a chip on his shoulder that had seemed immovable.
I know you're upset, Clary, he said, his voice sharp. But if you're suggesting that Iz and I care less about Jace than you do...
I'm not, Clary said. I'm talking about your Parabatai connection. I was reading about the ceremony in the Codex. I know being Parabatai ties the two of you together. You can sense things about Jace, things that will help you when you're fighting. So I guess I mean, can you sense if he's still alive?
Clary, Isabel sounded worried.
I thought you didn't...
He's alive, Alec said cautiously.
You think I'd be this functional if he weren't alive? There's definitely something fundamentally wrong. I can feel that much. But he's still breathing.
Could the wrong thing be that he's being held prisoner? Said Clary in a small voice.
Alec looked toward the windows, the sheeting gray rain.
Maybe.
I can't explain it. I've never felt anything like it before. But he's alive.
Alec looked at her directly then.
I'm sure of it.
Then screw the council. We'll find him ourselves, Clary said.
Clary, if that were possible, don't you think we already would have?
Alec began.
We were doing what the Clave wanted us to do before, said Isabel. Patrols, searches. There are other ways.
Ways that break the law, you mean, said Alec. He sounded hesitant.
Clary hoped he wasn't going to repeat the Shadowhunter's motto when it came to the law.
Sed lex dura lex.
The law is harsh, but it is the law.
She didn't think she could take it.
The Seelie Queen offered me a favor, Clary said, at the fireworks party in Idris. The memory of that night, how happy she'd been, made her heart contract for a moment, and she had to stop and regain her breath. And a way to contact her. The Queen of the Fair Folk gives nothing for free. I know that. I'll take whatever debt it is on my shoulders. Clary remembered the words of the fairy girl who had handed her the bell.
You would do anything to save him. Whatever it cost you. Whatever you might owe to hell or heaven. Would you not?
I just want one of you to come with me. I'm not good with translating fairy speak. At least if you're with me, you can limit whatever the damage is. But if there's anything she can do...
I'll go with you, Isabel said immediately.
Alec looked at his sister darkly. We already talked to the fair folk. The council questioned them extensively, and they can't lie. The council asked them if they knew where Jace and Sebastian were, Clary said. Not if they'd be willing to look for them. The Seelie Queen knew about my father. Knew about the angel he summoned and trapped. Knew the truth about my blood and Jace's. I think there's not much that happens in this world that she doesn't know about.
It's true, said Isabel, a little animation entering her voice. You know you have to ask fairies the exact right thing to get useful information out of them, Alec. They're very hard to question, even if they do have to tell the truth. A favor, though, is different.
And its potential for danger is literally unlimited, said Alec.
If Jace knew I let Clary go to the Seelie Queen, he'd...
I don't care, Clary said. He'd do it for me. Tell me he wouldn't. If I were missing, he'd burn the whole world down till he could dig you out of the ashes.
I know, Alec said, sounding exhausted.
Hell, you think I don't want to burn down the world right now? I'm just trying to be...
An older brother, said Isabel.
I get it.
Alec looked as if he were fighting for control.
If something happened to you, Isabel, after Max and Jace...
Izzy got to her feet, went across the room, and put her arm around Alec. Their dark hair, precisely the same color, mixed together as Isabel whispered something into her brother's ear. Clary watched them with not a little envy. She had always wanted a brother, and she had one now. Sebastian. It was like always wanting a puppy for a pet and being handed a hellhound instead. She watched as Alec tugged his sister's hair affectionately, nodded, and released her.
We should all go, he said. But I have to tell Magnus at least what we're doing. It wouldn't be fair not to.
Do you want to use my phone? Isabel asked, offering the battered pink object to him.
Alec shook his head. He's waiting downstairs with the others. You'll have to give Luke some kind of excuse, too, Clary. I'm sure he's expecting you to go home with him, and he says your mother's been pretty sick about this whole thing.
She blames herself for Sebastian's existence.
Clary got to her feet, even though she thought he was dead all those years.
It's not her fault.
Isabel pulled her golden whip down from where it hung on the wall and wrapped it around her wrist, so that it looked like a ladder of shining bracelets.
No one blames her.
That never matters, said Alec. Not when you blame yourself. In silence, the three of them made their way through the corridors of the Institute, oddly crowded now with other shadow hunters, some of whom were part of the special commissions that had been sent out from Idris to deal with the situation. None of them really looked at Isabel, Alec, or Clary with much curiosity. Initially,
Clary had felt so much as if she were being stared at and had heard the whispered words, Valentine's daughter, so many times that she'd started to dread coming to the Institute. But she'd stood up in front of the council enough times now that the novelty had worn off. They took the elevator downstairs. The nave of the Institute was brightly lit with witch light as well as the usual tapers and was filled with council members and their families. Luke and Magnus were sitting in a pew, talking to each other. Beside Luke was a tall, blue-eyed woman who looked just like him. She had curled her hair and dyed the gray brown, but Clary still recognized her. Luke's sister, Amadis. Magnus got up at the sight of Alec and came over to talk to him. Izzy appeared to recognize someone else across the pews and darted away in her usual manner, without pausing to say where she was going. Clary went to greet Luke and Amadis. Both of them looked tired, and Amadis was patting Luke's shoulder sympathetically. Luke rose to his feet and hugged Clary when he saw her. Amadis congratulated Clary on being cleared by the council, and she nodded. She felt only half there, most of her numb, and the rest of her responding on autopilot. She could see Magnus and Alec out of the corner of her eye. They were talking, Alec leaning in close to Magnus, the way couples often seemed to curve into each other when they spoke, in their own contained universe. She was happy to see them happy. But it hurt, too. She wondered if she would ever have that again, or ever even want it again. She remembered Jace's voice. I don't even want anyone but you.
Earth to Clary, said Luke. Do you want to head home? Your mother is dying to see you, and she'd love to catch up with Amadis before she goes back to Idris tomorrow. I thought we could have dinner. You pick the restaurant.
He was trying to hide the concern in his voice, but Clary could hear it. She hadn't been eating much lately, and her clothes had started to hang more loosely on her frame.
I don't really feel like celebrating, she said. Not with the council deprioritizing the search for Jace.
Clary, it doesn't mean they're going to stop, said Luke.
I know. It's just... It's like when they say a search and rescue mission is now a search for bodies.
That's what it sounds like.
She swallowed. Anyway, I was thinking of going to Tacky's for dinner with Isabel and Alec, she said. Just to do something normal.
Amadis squinted toward the door.
It's raining pretty hard out there.
Clary felt her lips stretch into a smile. She wondered if it looked as false as it felt.
I won't melt.
Luke folded some money into her hand, clearly relieved she was doing something as normal as going out with friends.
Just promise to eat something.
Okay. Through the twinge of guilt, she managed a real half-smile in his direction before she turned away. Magnus and Alec were no longer where they had been a moment ago. Glancing around, Clary saw Izzy's familiar long black hair through the crowd. She was standing by the Institute's large double doors, talking to someone Clary couldn't see. Clary headed toward Isabel. As she drew closer, she recognized one of the group, with a slight shock of surprise, as Aline Penhallow. Her glossy black hair had been cut stylishly just above her shoulders. Standing next to Aline was a slim girl with pale white gold hair that curled in ringlets. It was drawn back from her face, showing the tips of her ears were slightly pointed. She wore council robes, and as Clary came closer, she saw that the girl's eyes were a brilliant and unusual blue-green, a color that made Clary's fingers yearn for her Prismacolor pencils for the first time in 2 weeks.
It must be weird, with your mother being the new consul, Isabel was saying to Aline as Clary joined them. Not that Gia isn't much better than... Hey, Clary.
Aline, you remember Clary? The two girls exchanged nods. Clary had once walked in on Aline kissing Jace. It had been awful at the time, but the memory held no sting now. She'd be relieved to walk in on Jace kissing someone else at this point. At least it would mean he was alive.
And this is Aline's girlfriend, Helen Blackthorne, Isabel said with heavy emphasis.
Clary shot her a glare. Did Isabel think she was an idiot? Besides, she remembered Aline telling her that she kissed Jace only as an experiment to see if any guy were her type. Apparently, the answer had been no. Helen's family runs the Los Angeles Institute.
Helen, this is Clary Frey.
Valentine's daughter, Helen said. She looked surprised and a little impressed.
Clary winced. I try not to think about that too much.
Sorry, I can see why you wouldn't, Helen flushed. Her skin was very pale, with a slight sheen to it, like a pearl. I voted for the council to keep prioritizing the search for Jace, by the way. I'm sorry we were overruled.
Thanks.
Not wanting to talk about it, Clary turned to Aline. Congratulations on your mother being made consul. That must be pretty exciting.
Aline shrugged.
She's busy a lot more now.
She turned to Isabel. Did you know your dad put his name in for the Inquisitor position?
Clary felt Isabel freeze beside her.
No. No, I didn't know that.
I was surprised, Aline added. I thought he was pretty committed to running the Institute here, she broke off, looking past Clary.
Helen, I think your brother is trying to make the world's biggest puddle of melted wax over there. You might want to stop him.
Helen blew out an exasperated breath, muttered something about 12-year-old boys, and vanished into the crowd just as Alec pushed his way forward. He greeted Aline with a hug. Clary forgot sometimes that the Penhallows and the Lightwoods had known each other for years, and looked at Helen in the crowd.
Is that your girlfriend?
Aline nodded.
Helen Blackthorne.
I heard there's some fairy blood in that family, said Alec.
Ah, Clary thought. That explained the pointed ears.
Nephilim blood was dominant, and the child of a fairy and a shadow hunter would be a shadow hunter as well. But sometimes the fairy blood could express itself in odd ways, even generations down the line.
A little, said Aline.
Look, I wanted to thank you, Alec.
Alec looked bewildered.
What for?
What you did in the Hall of Accords, Aline said, kissing Magnus like that. It gave me the push I needed to tell my parents, to come out to them. And if I hadn't done that, I don't think, when I met Helen, I would have had the nerve to say anything.
Oh, Alec looked startled, as if he'd never considered what impact his actions might have had on anyone outside his immediate family.
And your parents? Were they good about it?
Aline rolled her eyes. They're sort of ignoring it, like it might go away if they don't talk about it.
Clary remembered what Isabel had said about the Clave's attitude toward its gay members.
If it happens, you don't talk about it.
But it could be worse.
It could definitely be worse, said Alec, and there was a grim edge to his voice that made Clary look at him sharply.
Aline's face melted into a look of sympathy.
I'm sorry, she said. If your parents aren't...
They're fine with it, Isabel said, a little too sharply.
Well, either way, I shouldn't have said anything right now, not with Jace missing. You must all be so worried.
She took a deep breath.
I know people have probably said all sorts of stupid things to you about him, the way they do when they don't really know what to say. I wanted to tell you something.
She ducked away from a passerby with impatience and moved closer to the Lightwoods and Clary, lowering her voice.
Alec, Izzy, I remember once when you guys came to see us in Idris. I was 13 and Jace was, I think he was 12. He wanted to see Brosselin Forest, so we borrowed some horses and rode there one day. Of course, we got lost. Brosselin's impenetrable. It got darker, and the woods got thicker, and I was terrified. I thought we'd die there. But Jace was never scared. He was never anything but sure we'd find our way out. It took hours, but he did it. He got us out of there. I was so grateful, but he just looked at me like I was crazy. Like, of course he'd get us out. Failing wasn't an option. I'm just saying, he'll find his way back to you. I know it.
Clary didn't think she'd ever seen Izzy cry, and she was clearly trying not to now. Her eyes were suspiciously wide and shining. Alec was looking at his shoes. Clary felt a wellspring of misery wanting to leap up inside her, but forced it down. She couldn't think about Jace when he was 12. Couldn't think about him lost in the darkness, or she'd think about him now, lost somewhere, trapped somewhere, needing her help. expecting her to come, and she'd break.
"Aline," she said, seeing that neither Isabel nor Alec could speak.
"Thank you."
Aline flashed a shy smile.
"I meant it."
"Aline!" It was Helen, her hand firmly clamped around the wrist of a younger boy whose hands were covered with blue wax. He must have been playing with the tapers in the huge candelabras that decorated the sides of the nave. He looked about 12 with an impish grin and the same shocking blue-green eyes as his sister, though his hair was dark brown.
"We're back. We should probably go before Jules destroys the whole place. Not to mention that I have no idea where Tibbs and Livy have gone."
"They were eating wax,"
the boy, Jules, supplied helpfully.
"Oh, God," Helen groaned, and then looked apologetic.
"Never mind me. I've got 6 younger brothers and sisters and 1 older. It's always a zoo."
Jules looked from Alec to Isabel and then at Clary.
"How many brothers and sisters have you got?"
he asked. Helen paled. Isabel said in a remarkably steady voice, "There are 3 of us." Jules' eyes stayed on Clary.
"You don't look alike."
"I'm not related to them," Clary said. "I don't have any brothers or sisters."
"None?"
Disbelief registered in the boy's tone, as if she'd told him she had webbed feet.
"Is that why you look so sad?"
Clary thought of Sebastian, with his ice-white hair and black eyes.
"If only," she thought, "if only I didn't have a brother, none of this would have happened."
A little throb of hatred went through her, warming her icy blood.
"Yes," she said softly. "That's why I'm sad."
Chapter 2. Thorns. Helen. Simon was waiting for Clary, Alec, and Isabel outside the Institute, under an overhang of stone that only just protected him from the worst of the rain. He turned as they came out through the doors, and Clary saw that his dark hair was pasted to his forehead and neck. He pushed it back and looked at her, a question in his eyes.
"I'm cleared," she said, and as he started to smile, she shook her head.
"But they're deprioritizing the search for Jace.
I'm pretty sure they think he's dead."
Simon looked down at his wet jeans and t-shirt, a wrinkled gray ringer tee that said, "Clearly I have made some bad decisions," on the front in block lettering. He shook his head.
"I'm sorry."
"The Clave can be like that," Isabel said.
"I guess we shouldn't have expected anything else."
"Basia cocuum," Simon said. "Or whatever their motto is."
"It's descensus Averno facilis est. The descent to hell is easy," said Alec. "You just said kiss the cook."
"Damn it," said Simon. "I knew Jace was screwing with me."
His wet brown hair fell back into his eyes. He flicked it away with a gesture impatient enough that Clary caught a flashing glimpse of the silvery mark of Cain on his forehead.
"Now what?"
"Now we go see the Sealy Queen," said Clary. As she touched the bell at her throat, she explained to Simon about Kaylee's visit to Luke and Jocelyn's reception, and her promises to Clary about the Sealy Queen's help. Simon looked dubious. "The red-headed lady with the bad attitude who made you kiss Jace? I didn't like her."
"That's what you remember about her? That she made Clary kiss Jace?"
Isabel sounded annoyed.
"The Sealy Queen is dangerous. She was just playing around that time. Usually, she likes to drive at least a few humans to screaming madness every day before breakfast."
"I'm not human," Simon said.
"Not anymore."
He looked at Isabel only briefly, dropped his gaze, and turned to Clary. "You want me with you? I think it would be good to have you there. Daylighter, Mark of Cain. Some things have to impress even the Queen."
"I wouldn't bet on it," said Alec.
Clary glanced past him and asked, "Where's Magnus?"
"He said it would be better if he didn't come.
Apparently, he and the Sealy Queen have some kind of history." Isabel raised her eyebrows.
"Not that kind of history," said Alec irritably.
"Some kind of feud. Though," he added, half under his breath,
"the way he got around before me, I wouldn't be surprised."
"Alec!"
Isabel dropped back to talk to her brother, and Clary opened her umbrella with a snap. It was one Simon had bought her years ago at the Museum of Natural History, and had a pattern of dinosaurs on the top. She saw his expression change to one of amusement as he recognized it. "Shall we walk?" he inquired and offered his arm. The rain was coming down steadily, creating small rills out of the gutters and splashing water up from the wheels of passing taxis. It was odd, Simon thought, that although he didn't feel cold, the sensation of being wet and clammy was still irritating. He shifted his gaze slightly, looking at Alec and Isabel over his shoulder. Isabel hadn't really met his eyes since they'd come out of the Institute, and he wondered what she was thinking. She seemed to want to talk to her brother, and as they paused at the corner of Park Avenue, he heard her say,
"So, what do you think about Dad putting his name in for the Inquisitor position?"
"I think it sounds like a boring job."
Isabel was holding an umbrella. It was clear plastic, decorated with decals of colorful flowers. It was one of the girliest things Simon had ever seen, and he didn't blame Alec for ducking out from under it and taking his chances with the rain.
"I don't know why he'd want it."
"I don't care if it's boring," Isabel whisper hissed. "If he takes it, he'll be an Idris all the time. Like, all the time. He can't run the Institute and be the Inquisitor. He can't have two jobs at once."
"If you've noticed, Iz, he's an Idris all the time anyway."
"Alec."
The rest of what she said was lost as the light changed and traffic surged forward, spraying icy water up onto the pavement. Clary dodged a geyser of it and nearly knocked into Simon. He took her hand to steady her.
"Sorry," she said.
Her hand felt small and cold in his.
"Wasn't really paying attention."
"I know." He tried to keep the worry out of his voice. She hadn't really been paying attention to anything for the past 2 weeks. At first she'd cried, and then been angry. Angry that she couldn't join the patrols looking for Jace. Angry at the council's endless grilling. Angry that she was being kept virtually a prisoner at home because she was under suspicion from the Clave. Most of all, she'd been angry at herself for not being able to come up with a rune that would help. She would sit at her desk at night for hours, her stele clutched so tightly in whitening fingers that Simon was afraid it would snap in half. She'd try to force her mind to present her with a picture that would tell her where Jace was, but night after night, nothing happened. She looked older, he thought as they entered the park through a gap in the stone wall on Fifth Avenue. Not in a bad way, but she was different from the girl she'd been when they had walked into the Pandemonium Club on that night that had changed everything. She was taller, but it was more than that. Her expression was more serious. There was more grace and force in the way she walked. Her green eyes were less dancing, more focused. She was starting to look, he realized with a jolt of surprise, like Jocelyn. Clary paused in a circle of dripping trees. The branches blocked most of the rain here, and Isabel and Clary leaned their umbrellas against the trunks of nearby trees. Clary unclasped the chain around her neck and let the bell slide into her palm. She looked around at all of them, her expression serious. "This is a risk," she said. "And I'm pretty sure if I take it, I can't go back from it. So if any of you don't want to come with me, it's all right. I understand." Simon reached out and put his hand over hers. There was no need to think. Where Clary went, he went. They had been through too much for it to be any other way. Isabel followed suit, and lastly, Alec. Rain dripped off his long black lashes like tears, but his expression was resolute. The four of them held hands tightly. Clary rang the bell. There was a sensation as if the world were spinning. Not the same sensation as being flung through a portal, Clary thought, into the heart of a maelstrom, but more as if she were sitting on a merry-go-round that had begun to spin faster and faster. She was dizzy and gasping when the sensation stopped suddenly and she was standing still again, her hand clasped with Isabel's, Alec's, and Simon's. They released one another, and Clary glanced around. She had been here before, in this dark brown shining corridor that looked as if it had been carved out of a tiger's eye gemstone. The floor was smooth,
worn down by the passage of thousands of years' worth of fairy feet. Light came from glinting chips of gold in the walls, and at the end of the passage was a multicolored curtain that swayed back and forth as if moved by wind, though there was no wind here underground. As Clary drew near to it, she saw that it was sewed out of butterflies. Some of them were still alive, and their struggles made the curtain flutter as if in a stiff breeze. She swallowed back the acid taste in her throat.
"Hello?" she called. "Is anyone there?"
The curtain rustled aside, and the fairy knight Meliorn stepped out into the hallway. He wore the white armor Clary remembered, but there was a sigil over his left breast now, the four C's that also decorated Luke's council robes, marking him as a member. There was a scar, also, on Meliorn's face that was new, just under his leaf-colored eyes. He regarded her frigidly. "One does not greet the queen of the Seely Court with a barbarous human hello," he said. "As if you were hailing a servant. The proper address is well met."
"But we haven't met," said Clary. "I don't even know if she's here."
Meliorn looked at her with scorn. "If the queen were not present and ready to receive you, ringing the bell would not have brought you. Now come, follow me, and bring your companions with you." Clary turned to gesture at the others, then followed Meliorn through the curtain of tortured butterflies, hunching her shoulders in the hopes that no part of their wings would touch her. One by one, the four of them stepped into the queen's chamber. Clary blinked in surprise. It looked entirely different from how it had the last time she'd been here. The queen reclined on a white and gold divan, and all around her stretched a floor made of alternating squares of black and white, like a great checkerboard. Strings of dangerous-looking thorns hung from the ceiling, and on each thorn was impaled a will-o'-the-wisp, its normally blinding light flickering as it died. The room shimmered in their glow. Meliorn went to stand beside the queen. Other than him, the room was empty of courtiers. Slowly the queen sat up straight. She was as beautiful as ever, her dress a diaphanous mixture of silver and gold, her hair like rosy copper as she arranged it gently over one white shoulder. Clary wondered why she was bothering. Of all of them there, the only one likely to be moved by her beauty was Simon, and he hated her.
"Well met, Nephilim, Daylighter," she said, inclining her head in their direction. "Daughter of Valentine, what brings you to me?"
Clary opened her hand. The bell shone there like an accusation. "You sent your handmaiden to tell me to ring this if I ever needed your help."
"And you told me you wanted nothing from me," said the queen. "That you had everything you desired."
Clary thought back desperately to what Jace had said when they had had an audience with the queen before. How he had flattered and charmed her. It was as if he had suddenly acquired a whole new vocabulary. She glanced back over her shoulder at Isabel and Alec, but Isabel only made an irritable motion at her, indicating that she should keep going.
"Things change," Clary said.
The queen stretched her legs out luxuriously.
"Very well. What is it you want from me?"
"I want you to find Jace Lightwood." In the silence that followed, the sound of the will-o'-the-wisps crying in their agony was softly audible. At last the queen said,
"You must think us powerful indeed if you believe the fair folk can succeed where the Clave has failed."
"The Clave wants to find Sebastian. I don't care about Sebastian. I want Jace," Clary said. "Besides, I already know you know more than you're letting on. You predicted this would happen. No one else knew. But I don't believe you sent me that bell when you did, the same night Jace disappeared, without knowing something was brewing."
"Perhaps I did," said the queen, admiring her shimmering toenails.
"I've noticed the fair folk often say perhaps when there's truth they want to hide," Clary said. "It keeps you from having to give a straight answer."
"Perhaps so," said the queen with an amused smile.
"Mayhap is a good word, too," Alec suggested.
"Also perchance," Izzy said.
"I see nothing wrong with maybe," said Simon.
"A little modern,
but the gist of the idea comes across.
The queen waved away their words as if they were annoying bees buzzing around her head. I do.